I think it's fair to say that as human beings, we're all looking for happiness. We're all looking for happiness. It's why we're here, right? It's why we come take a day, a full day, and on a beautiful spring day, and come to practice meditation because we're looking for happiness. You know, we're all looking for happiness, but we suffer so much. We suffer so much. Even on a day like today, you know, we come with the motivation to find happiness, or we come because we're looking for happiness, but a lot of what we do vis-a-vis the day itself causes us suffering. The way we relate to the day, we relate to the experience, we relate to the people, etc. So we kind of, as human beings, we have this conflict. You know, we're looking for happiness and we suffer so much. We suffer so much. What the teachings would suggest is that we suffer because we look for happiness in the wrong places. You know, we all want happiness, but we look for happiness in the wrong places. Or we look for happiness in things that can't bring us happiness. Or we look for happiness in things that can only bring a limited happiness. We look for things that can't bring us true happiness, a lasting happiness. So it's a good question to ask. It's a good question to ask yourself. Where am I looking for happiness? It's one of those questions where you have to be really truthful, you know, because you can say, well, I'm looking for happiness, you know, and quote what the Buddha would say. Or you can really look and look at your life and what you're doing and answer that question truthfully. You know, for most of us, we're looking for happiness in things that can't bring us a true happiness. So I would suspect that, you know, we're looking for happiness in certain things, you know, in getting certain things, in things being a certain way in our lives. I mean, it's sort of the dilemma that we come to on retreat because, you know, although we think we're looking for a happiness that is a true happiness, we sort of have an idea about what we want, you know. And when we don't get that, then we may struggle on the retreat if it's concentration and we have hindrances, and then we don't like that we have hindrances. Or we come to the retreat and the body is sore or it's in pain and we don't like that. So, you know, I'd suspect that we're all looking for happiness in certain things that can't bring us happiness. And the way that you really can observe and see, you know, because I said, you know, ask the question, where am I looking for happiness? The way that you can tell is through your thinking. You know, pay attention to your thinking. Your thinking will show you where you're looking for happiness. You know, so your thinking, you know, may be saying, if I get this, I'll be happy. You know, on the day long, but also in many, many things in life. If I do this, if I accomplish this, if this happens, I'll be happy. I mean, another way of looking at where you're looking for happiness is, and then looking at your thinking to see where you're looking for happiness, is really look at your thinking in terms of your unhappiness. In terms of your unhappiness. You know, so, I mean, I've been noticing over the past week how, I mentioned the other night that my brothers and sisters and I have been put in the process over the last week or so of putting my mom into a nursing home, very much needed. And, I can see how, it's been a real, you know, there's been a fair amount of suffering around that. And, you know, and I see that in my thinking. So, you know, that's kind of like my unhappiness is because things aren't the way that I want them to be. I don't want her to be in a nursing home. You know? And then there's, you know, my unhappiness around the way that some of my siblings are responding and acting, one or two in particular, you know, that are causing me stress, you know, so because they're not doing what I want them to do. You know, if only they would go along with the plan or go along and do things the way that I want them to do it. Yeah. And, you know, and I've been working on some creative stuff. I've been doing some writing, and it hasn't really been going the way that I would like it to go, and I have a lot of unhappiness about that, you know, and I see that in my thinking about it. You know, so those are some, you know, so looking at my unhappiness, I see that, you know, I'm looking for happiness in my mother being a certain way or certain, you know, it's like, that's probably the only time I've ever experienced that in my life in terms of that really, you know, it's like, I mean, you know, just kidding, you know, or my brother being a certain way or these relationships being a certain way and my work going a certain way, you know, and if those things happen, I'll be happy. Yeah, because we have this desire for things to be a certain way. The Buddha said, you know, we have a desire to be joined with which is what is pleasing and disjoined from which we find displeasing. So we have a desire for things to be a certain way and we cling to that desire. You know, we hold on to that desire. Or if it's the aversion, I don't like want things to be this way, then we hold on to that aversion. But if you think about it in terms of what we want and where we're looking for happiness, we have a desire for certain things to be a certain way or to get certain things or for us to be a certain way, and we hold on to that desire, and that generates lots and lots and lots of thinking and stories. So we have all these stories about our lives and ourselves based on the things that we want and the things that we want that we don't have, and what we have and don't want. As the Buddha said, being joined with which we find displeasing and being disjoined from which we find pleasing. You know, so, you know, I mean, I see this so much in my own thinking, you know, that wanting, you know. I have to get this to be happy. If I can get this, I'm going to be happy. Of course, the words aren't exactly like that, right? You know, but you know, if you start to look at your thinking, you can see, you know, and you start to really pay attention to it, you'll see where you're looking for happiness. You know, I have to get this in order for me to be happy. I have to accomplish this in order for me to be happy. These things have to happen in my life in order for me to be happy. I mean, this is really for me. We were talking a little bit with somebody in one of the interviews about this, has come into great focus, you know, as over the last year when I turned 60. You know? And seeing that many of the things that I want or that I've wanted in my life, I'm not going to get, you know, just by dint of my age. I'm just not going to get them. It's not going to happen. And then it's also seeing really clearly that, you know, that I may get certain things that I want and things may go the way that I want them to go in certain respects, but like, so what? I'm going to be dead in 10, 20 years, you know? So what's going to be, is that, so are these things, can these things really make me happy given the fact that I'm not going to be around that much longer? You know, given the fact that we die, you know, do these things really have a meaning? I mean, that was the Buddha's basic question. And you start to see that, you know, a lot of the things that we want, or I've seen in my own mind, the things that I want or the things that I need in order to be happy can't bring me a lasting happiness. They can't bring me a lasting happiness. Simply by dint of the fact that, you know, these things are conditioned and I'm going to die sooner than later. And in the grand scheme of things. You know, so I think, you know, for me, there's been, you know, it's a very interesting thing, right? Because there can be a real despair around that, you know, and I've struggled with some despair. I mean, this is the despair the existentialists talk about, you know? It's like, you know, looking at all the ways that we live and seeing the meaninglessness in all these things, the utter meaninglessness, and seeing that these things aren't going to bring us a lasting happiness. You know? But I always loved what Sartre said. You know, he said, you know, life begins on the other side of despair. So we can wallow in our despair, you know, and which is really, you know, suffering, or we can ask, you know, what else is there? Is there something else besides this kind of happiness that obviously I crave? Obviously I crave. Is there something else? Is there a way to another kind of happiness? You know, I mean, most of us look for happiness in the way of the world, in getting certain kinds of sense experiences, sense pleasures, in getting certain things, material things, in status, accomplishment, praise. Avoiding pain, loss, disrepute, and blame. You know, is there another way? You know, we really kind of embrace that despair, which the Buddha asks. I mean, that was the Buddha's despair. You know, he said, you know, this isn't fitting for me to be living the way that I'm living, given the fact that there's sickness, aging, and death. Is there another way to live? You know, and the Buddha found another way. You know, the Buddha found a path. You know, it's the path that we seek to follow. You know, as practitioners on this path, you know, our goal isn't to be Buddhists. You know, it's like, you know, we don't do this so that we can practice Buddhism. You know, the Buddha offers us a path that leads to somewhere, that leads to somewhere, and that's what we're striving for. So, you know, I mean, my teacher talks about this a lot. The path is not the goal. It's kind of a new agey idea, you know, like it's all about the journey, you know. No, it's all about what's at the end of the journey. It's all about what's at the end of the journey. Now, we try to take to the journey with great joy and practice joyfully, you know. But I'll be damned if, you know, The journey is seven. I mean, the goal is 7 hours of walking and sitting. You know, it's like, you know. So the Buddha's path leads us somewhere. Leads us somewhere. I like to think of it as a journey. You know, it's like if you're on a journey, you're going somewhere. You know, if you're going to Montauk, you know, your goal isn't to be on the Long Island Expressway, right? You know. Your goal is to be in Montauk, the lighthouse, you know, the dock. That's where you want to be. So, you know, our question is like, you know, where are we going? Where are we going? You know, and the Buddha's journey is a journey inward. We're going in. We're going in. We're going inward. You know, which is not typically what we do, right? You know, what we do, you know, the Buddha's journey is a journey of finding the happiness inside, inward. You know, but we tend to look for happiness in things that are external, right? I mean, all those things that I described, my mother, my brother, you know, my work, you know, all that's external. All those places that where we tend to look for happiness are things outside of ourselves, in conditioned things that are outside of ourselves. Or if we look for happiness, yeah, you know, also like in the body, the way the body is, or even the way the mind is, you know, in terms of its motions. But all those things are unreliable and they're conditioned. You know, so we all tend to look for happiness in conditioned things and things outside of ourselves, things external to ourselves. The Buddha's journey is not a journey of going outside. It's a journey about going in. It's a journey inward. You know, and that journey begins, as I spoke to this morning, you know, it's like coming out of the head, you know, coming out of the head. You know, and this is where we're spending most of our time. I mean, you know, of course, the interesting thing is, you know, we're spending most of our time thinking about how we can get things that are outside of ourselves. you know, or how we can get what we don't have. I mean, think about the things that you thought about today. You know, maybe they pertain to the meditation, you know, but they were all things probably largely, you know, beyond your control, things outside of yourself. Or the thinking that caused you suffering, at least, right? So the journey inward is, you know, it's a real journey. It's not a metaphysical journey. You know, it's a physical journey inward. It's a physical journey inward, out of the head and the thought realm, into the body. You know, so it's letting go of the thinking. You know, as I talked about this morning, letting go of the thinking, letting go of the narratives and the stories about what we need in order to be happy and who we are. You know, the Buddha called those stories, you know, the worlds we create, or the term is becoming, that which is become something else. He said the holy life is lived for the abandoning of becoming. So to come out of that narrative, come out of those different stories and into the body, out of the head and into the body. You know, and again, most of the narratives are about what we think we need in order to be happy, or what we don't have that's causing us unhappiness, or who we are or who we need to be in order to find happiness, what kind of a self we need to be in order to find happiness. So it's a journey out of the head, out of the thinking, out of the narratives, and into the body. You know, and we create within the body. You know, so this is the journey. You know, think about it as a journey. Out of the head, into the body, to the breath. You know, and we begin to create, you know, in this journey, an easeful abiding. You know, an easeful abiding. So as you know, as we're making this journey, and you know, this is really the first stop on the journey. You know, the first goal. It's not the end goal. It's kind of like a way station, but it's a very important way station, and, you know, we try to make it as comfortable as possible, you know, because this is a place where we want to make this journey inward, and as I, you know, delineated this morning in going through the steps of the breath meditation, great part of that motivation to go inward is going to be cultivating a place inside that feels good. You know, if the place inside feels good, if the breath feels good, we don't mind going inward. You know, a lot of us, you know, going in into the body is something that we are very frightened of, or we have sort of a lot of resistance to, because we associate the body with pain, because that's where our mind tends to incline. A lot of us have had trauma that gets held in the body. You know, so it's a very slow process, dare I say, of going inside and, you know, and beginning with having a center inside of ourselves that feels good, a place of ease, a place of well-being. And gradually, you know, we begin to develop, you know, this journey inward and this abiding inward. You know, the abiding inward becomes, you know, very easeful and very pleasant. You know, as we begin to develop the meditation more and we go more inward, you know, our abiding inward can be very easeful. We develop the qualities of PT or rapture, the flow of energy in the body, and it's very pleasurable. So we develop this quality of sukha and pleasure that comes from being within. Yeah. So, you know, this is really that the first part of the happiness that we're seeking is, you know, we make this journey within and we begin to find this happiness of concentration. But again, it's a way station. It's a way station because ultimately, where we want to go to is to the heart. Okay, that's where the journey leads us. The journey leads us to the heart. You know, so the journey isn't to practice Buddhism or to practice the Dharma. The journey is to connect to the heart. Buddhism is one way. The Buddhist teachings are one way to do that. I mean, for me, they really work. There's other ways to do it too that other traditions teach, etc., etc. You know, but this is a way in to the heart. It's a journey inward into the heart, to the happiness inside and the happiness of the heart. We see people making this journey sometimes, and I've had the privilege over the years of working with people who are dying, including some people in our group, other people who've come to me over the years when they were dying. And, you know, not everybody is able to do this, particularly if you have some practice, you're able to do this. But what oftentimes happens to people as they get close to dying is, you know, they realize, you know, that all those things that lay outside are, you know, they're gonna die. Those things are, you know, beyond their reach, and there's nothing outside of themselves anymore that can bring them happiness. You know, so, you know, they oftentimes begin to look, is there something else? Is there something else? And, you know, sometimes people will just start to, you know, and sometimes I can help people do that, to look inside. You know, and then, and we've all heard stories, you know, and some of the people that I've worked with and people from this group have, you know, experienced the greatest happiness they ever known once they gave up the thoughts about all the things that they want and all the things that they don't have and begin to look inside, you know, and find that happiness is right there. You know, and not only is happiness that right there is right there, but the happiness that there is a happiness that transcends birth and death. It's a happiness that's true. It's right there inside. So this is the journey that we make to this happiness that's right there, that's inside, that's always there. You know, if we make this journey, if we follow the path, you know, it will lead us to the heart. So we make this journey into the heart. And again, this is a real thing. You know, the heart is a real thing. You know, this is why it's so important, and we've been talking about this in classes lately, is to, you know, as we make this journey, you know, we're going to a real place. It's a real place. It's not metaphysical, you know, and we begin to start to feel it. You know, we begin to start to feel the heart. We begin to start to feel metta. Metta is a real thing. We begin to start to feel compassion. We begin to start to feel joy. These are real things that are in the heart. So our journey is a journey to these qualities of the heart. You know, and a very important part of where we're going, you know, in this journey is to this quality of metta. And very specifically, first and foremost, metta for ourselves, love for ourselves. You know, so, you know, we can, you know, this in terms of where we're going to and where the practice is leading us, what our goal is, you know, we can begin with first and foremost being able to love ourselves. You know, and then once we can love ourselves, as the Buddha says, then we can learn to love, then we can love others. You know, we can think of this as, you know, where our journey leads us, to love for ourselves. You know, I mean, if you think about this, you know, we can't find happiness in life if we're in conflict with ourselves. You know, we can't find happiness in life if we're at odds with ourselves. You know, if there's disillusionment with ourselves or aversion to ourselves or judgment to ourselves or criticism to ourselves. You know, most of us are in conflict with ourselves. You know, I look out at people I know and people in the world, most of them are in conflict with themselves. You know, working with students over many years, people come in for meetings, most people are in conflict with themselves. I look inside my own heart and I know that I'm in conflict with myself. Self-aversion, self-judgment, grappling with myself, disillusionment with myself. And when we don't feel good about ourselves, then we look outside of ourselves for happiness. We look outside of ourselves for happiness. You know, and for most of us, the last place we look is inside. It's kind of like, you know, that's the last stop, you know? You know, the last place we look is inside. You know, and, I, you know, there is this quality in, you know, in practice of, you know, I've tried everything, you know, let me try the Dharma, let me try to go inside, you know? I mean, I know that was certainly my story. It was kind of a classical story, you know, in my mid-30s, early 30s, you know, having tried all these other ways of finding happiness, you know, and only finding misery, even though I got a lot of the things that I thought that I wanted to get, you know, and well, you know, sort of being, you know, I'll try anything, you know, all right, let me try this, going inside. I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, it really came to the practice first because I thought it would teach me how to get the things that are outside of myself, you know? And then it was like, damn, you know? You know, and we still kind of battle with that, don't we? It's the last place we look is inside, you know, but this is where the journey leads us. This is why we practice. This is why we practice the Dharma. It's very countercultural, and it's very counterintuitive, I think, to go inside. And I think if you think about it in very practical terms, you know, it's like, you know, you wake up in the morning and you're looking for happiness. I mean, this is our instinct as a human being. And, you know, the instinct that we've developed is to look at happiness outside of ourselves. Oh, it's sunny. This is going to be a good day, right? I mean, it all starts there. You open the refrigerator. Oh, my God, I'm out of orange juice. This is going to be a terrible day. It's like, oh, you know, right from the beginning of the day, we're looking for happiness in things outside of ourselves, for things to go the way that we want them to go. You know, so this is very counterintuitive, you know, and it's if you continue to pull aside the blinds, you know, and I mean, we see this so much, you know, it's like New York because we have such violent weather, you know, it's like people miserable during the winter because it's so cold, you know, and then of course the hot summer, you know, it's like, you know, if you're looking for happiness, you know, if you're depending on what you're seeing when you pull across those blinds or when you flick on that TV, that's an unreliable happiness. You know, that's an unreliable happiness. And that's why you're here today, you know, because some people said, well, you know what? I'm going to enjoy the beautiful day. That's where I'm going to find happiness. But you're smarter than that. You said, you know what? There's a greater happiness than that, and that's what I want. That's what I want. Very counterintuitive because our instinct is to open those blinds and that's what's going to be, or open that refrigerator door, or look who's called, or what the emails are like, right? You know, so we make this journey in and we strive to develop self-love. We make this journey in and we connect to the heart and we begin to connect to our wish to be happy and to loving kindness for ourselves. You know, our tendency is to look for love from others, to look for validation from others. That's very unreliable, in case you hadn't noticed. You know? That's why I was suffering so much over the past week. 60 years old, and I'm still looking for that from my mother, you know? You know, and I'm terrified that I'm not going to get it because, you know, I mean, all right, no crying in the Dharma talk. All right. You know, and of course, even if we get it from others, you know, even if we get love from others and validation for others, if we can't love ourselves, it dies really fast. You know, it dies. It's like, you know, getting a plant, you know, it's like for years people would give me plants, but you know, they always would die. You know? You know, it's like getting a plant and not planting it, you know. Getting a geranium and not, you know, planting it. So, you know, this is where the journey leads. We have to have love for ourselves. You know, we have to learn to love ourselves and then act accordingly out of love for ourselves, to take action. That's the fruition of the path, is taking action that's an expression of self-love. You know, so the path reaches fruition not when you come to the day long, you know, but when you come to the day long wholeheartedly out of love for yourself and you practice connected to the heart out of love and compassion for yourself. That's the fruition of the practice. So the Buddha gives us a way to do this, right? The Buddha gives us a way to go inside, to go inside. You know, with a meditation. I mean, first he says, start to feel the heart a little bit by practicing generosity and virtue, you know, and then begin to make the journey inside. Then begin to make the journey inside through meditation. Come out of the head and come into the body. come out of the head and into the body. Let go of aversion and desire. Let go of the stories. Come into the body. Find an easeful abiding in the body, and then cultivate the heart. And then when you're out there in the world, be very heedful and pay attention and ask, are the actions that I'm taking informed by self-love? Am I taking actions that are informed by my wish to be happy and informed by the wish that I have for others, that they be happy? The Buddha gives us those skills, teaches us those skills so that we can go inside, so that we can know the heart. He teaches us those skills so that we can get to the, you know, the destination. He's like, you know, the Robert Moses of spiritual practice. You know, he's going to hate me for saying that. I'm sorry, Buddha, you know, but he creates the road inward. You know, he's given us a path inward. You know, we have this potential, this possibility for happiness inside ourselves, but we have to make that journey. We have to make that journey inward. We have to make the journey to the heart. And I think it's a good way to think about practice. It's you're making this journey inward. We're making this journey inward. You know, so you ask yourself, you know, where am I going? Where am I going? Where am I going? What's my journey? You know, our journey when we follow this path is inward into the heart. You know, when I was, I think I was in sixth grade, I was just thinking about this before. I wish I had thought about it earlier, I would have done a little research, but when I was in sixth grade, I think, my favorite book, and a lot of other kids in my class really liked this book, was a book called Fantastic Voyage. I think it was written by Isaac Asimov. You must remember it, no? A couple people. Anybody remember Fantastic Voyage? So it was a science fiction book, right? And I think it was the president had like a heart ailment. You know, there was something wrong with the heart, and the only way that they could save his life was that they had, you know, the doctors and nurses, and they put him in a submarine, and they miniaturized the submarine, you know, and then they injected the submarine into the, you know, the president's vein, and the voyage, it was a fantastic, I mean, it was an incredible book, you know, through all the aortas and the capillaries and stuff, and to finally get into the heart. It's a great way to think about it, though, because that's what we want to do, you know? You know, it's like you want to get in your own little submarine and find your way in there, you know? You know, I like that metaphor, that analogy, just only because it's, you know, it's real. It's not real, but, you know, it's a physical journey. It's this physical journey into the heart. It's a fantastic voyage. It's a great adventure. I mean, this is the greatest adventure you'll ever take in your life. The greatest adventure. You can go to Tibet. You can go to Burma. This is the real adventure, the journey that takes you inside, because this is where you'll find happiness. So let's just close our eyes for a minute.